The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
And welcome to Throwdown. I'm Emilio Lopez, and I am joined by Carlos Romero.
Yo, 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 what up, what up, what up?
Adam Vea.
What's up, humans?
And Brian Majola.
Hey, people, what's up?
So, you guys may notice there's a little bit of folks missing today. Tony's actually just got in from his little trip. Brett is still out and doing his thing, and Chris has got some deadlines and shit to do, so it's just the four-man squad this time around. So a couple of things, just so you know, Tony will be back on, I think, Throwdown Your Questions, and then he's going to jet away again for the next show of Throwdown, and we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Yo, man, Tony's Mr. Worldwide. He's going everywhere. Yeah,
right? Yo, man, I was going to say five world travel. That's that's actually Adam.
Well, now he's doing multiple states.
Yeah,
multi-state traveler. There you go.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, there's nothing really, other things that we need to get out of the way. I guess we just get started this week. Yeah, I guess it was a good week that everybody's kind of gone because nothing really happened.
Yeah, there's nothing. Nothing was going on. There's just limited news that we got to fill up. But yeah.
Yeah. What did they say? It's like the calm before the storm sort of deal.
The only big news, I guess, is just some of the financials, which we already pretty much assumed, which is the Switch just killing it still.
Yeah, there's just a little bit of financial stuff and all that stuff. But yeah, I call it the feature topic because it seems like it's one of the biggest things on here. So the ESA says that they are trying to earn back people's trust, and it's their top priority. I know, especially with all the craziness that has happened with them, it's like, can you really believe them? They said one of the things that they said, they're like, oh, you know, we're working on everything. We've gotten everybody's feedback, and we're gonna try to get everybody's trust back. I'm like, guys, you know, you realize you just lost a bunch of people's, and you just literally left everybody's information on the internet for people to just pick up.
Well, they said they outsource, and now they have a third party company that's, I guess, familiar with these type of processes, and they're going to be handling all that information. Also, they're reducing the amount of information they're requesting. Yeah. So we'll see when we fill it out this year.
It's interesting because, like, the funny thing is that if you went as a person that just went, like, you know, who bought a ticket,
yeah.
Everybody, all of their information is all protected by a bunch of firewalls and all kinds of other stuff. It was a different process than actually handling the games journalist. And I think I said this like a while ago, where I definitely think it's they sort of left well enough alone without actually, you know, updating the process. So that means that every single year that ever since they have had their website, it looks like they've always stored all of this personal information for every single game journalist online. Like this thing has just been sitting there just waiting for somebody to go, hey, wait a minute.
I think it was because of their whole tracking system of how they dish out passes to the media. And I know that for the past few years, they've been trying to reduce the amount that they give per site and per organization. And maybe that's why they kept everything separate. So that way, whenever, let's say you put in a request or whatever company you represent, then they can cross-reference from last year and say, all right, well, we sent them three badges and said, okay, but now they want five. And these are the three people that went last time for sure. And so they're not just wasting the badges.
They're always sort of changing the thing for a bit. I mean, you know, this is a little stuff within the coalition. It's like, you know, 1 minute, you know, 1 year one of the years that most of the team of the coalition was able to go to E3, like everybody. Yeah. It was Charles Singletary. It was JJ. It was Richard, Gary, everybody was all able to go. And then the following year, they're like, oh, no, you can't have all these people. I'm like, wait, nothing's different now. But yeah, it was that's a big thing. And then now they're also saying that they're sort of trying to work on the actual show itself. And they kind of released a little bit of a thing about what it was going to be not long ago, which was like they're going to go for some sort of like open experience, and they were going to invite like famous people or some weirdness. And I don't know if anybody really cares about that, especially if you're in gaming. You really want to just see the games, right?
I think they're trying to find filler because they see the trend of all these big publishers pulling out. So they have to have something else. So like, oh, we're going to contact influencers and we plan on doing shows and this and that. It's just trying to entice people to show up because they who knows? We won't see on what's happening on their end. Maybe ticket sales are slowing down.
Yeah, I don't know.
Wait a minute. This isn't good. These people aren't showing up.
Definitely Sony not going is also a big slap in the face of the ESA as well. Because it's like, oh, well, these guys aren't going. EA's not there. So Activision hasn't done it. So all the big publishers aren't there anymore.
Yeah, that's like if they're trying to get into the good graces of the gamers, it's like, shouldn't they start with, settling egos and trying to get Sony and Nintendo back into the fold? That's the ultimate thing that they can do because it's it seems like every year it's a new company that's not coming back, and it's
so far Nintendo said I don't know if they're going, but at least it's assumed at this point in time that they're going to be going.
Yeah.
They're probably going to be the only big dog in there right now.
What do you mean Microsoft?
Oh, Microsoft? No, I mean Nintendo's there. They were there last year. It's just that Microsoft left. Microsoft is now because they have their own theater. Yeah. They just put it in there. EA is kind of just said, "Okay, we're just going to rent this big parking lot out in Hollywood behind a theater." And then and they did that for like 2 years, and then Sony's not there. Activision hasn't done one in years.
Rockstar.
They were like the first one. No, Rockstar, the funny thing about Rockstar is that they have a presence there, but they're not open to the public.
Okay.
So like, it's just like it, like last time it's almost like they built a build, like, they built a building inside of the place and it just had security on it. It's like almost like, it's like, you're here, but not here. Yeah. And then the other time was like, I think two. Who's there? Who owns them? It's not 2K, right?
It's Take Two Interactive.
Take Two had a booth, and their thing had like, all the big games. Was like, it wasn't last year, but it was like the year before. It was like, Mafia.
Yeah.
And a bunch of the other games were all surrounding it. And then I was working with some other guys, and we actually went through the booth. They walked us through the booth, and I saw the Rockstar area within, like in the center of it. So it's like they're there, but they're not like doing any sort of like out exterior presentations. They probably just have their marketing guys there to talk to people and stuff like that.
And do you think it's a valid criticism for, it seems like it's two shows. It's like some of it's open to the public, some of it's open to the media. I don't know if this was E3. I think it was E3 where, Cyberpunk, it was shown to backstage. There was that viral video by Paris where he's coming out. Like
there's two. There's one from the year before and then there's one from last year.
Right. So it's like, we didn't even get to, I don't think we even saw like a second of that during that time. So it's like,
The first one they eventually put online, and then the second one, nobody's ever seen that one yet. And that one, though I think they did last year, they did have a presentation where you had to wait on a line and you watch a little, a presentation of it, and they give you some cyberpunk junk.
Didn't they give people jackets? Wasn't that a thing?
No, the behind closed doors ones, they got a jacket. In fact, I think last year they got the jacket, and the year before they got the action figure or the statue of the woman, the woman from that first trailer where arms split apart and all that. So yeah, you got that, but it was hard. It was hard to get in there. Granted, I was I had my little industry passport, and I'd see if I could squeeze my way in there somehow, and it didn't even work.
Well, and it's like, it's crazy because it's not like, you know, even the industry people like you and Tony, like, you guys go there and you're pretty much waiting in line like everyone else. When you go to the show floor.
I think as of the year before, like, nobody, like, now that it's sort of really separated, I don't even think most of the industry guys even hit the show floor unless they have a specific booth and they just walk them in. They don't even make them wait on a line.
Well, because
Rich was telling me that it's just they have appointment dates, so he has scheduled for appointments, but that's usually not to play the game or whatever it is. It's just to meet with a developer or talk. But yep. When it comes to playing the game, you actually have to wait online like everybody else.
So it's like it's all kind of switched around. I mean, again, I definitely feel like they really need to look at what the Gamescom is doing and what Tokyo Game Show is doing. Apparently, whatever the fuck those guys are doing, it's working.
Yeah.
But these guys seems like they're always tripping over their feet in some way. And now all the big guys are just like fed up with it and just said, "All right, we're not even going."
Well, originally it was money. It became too expensive to the point that it wasn't even worth it.
Well, it was
too expensive. The cost of hosting, yeah.
The change, within the time that me and Tony have sort of been going to E3, you definitely see a big change in what kind of developers that you actually see on the show floor. I think I talked about this before. It was like, we could have, I remember finding a bunch of really cool, like, independent developers. They had their own little booths and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, you found a bunch of other people there too. But all of a sudden, as the years have gone on, you see that these little guys are kind of got squashed out. And then now in E3, there's also like, there's this like empty space. So number one, it's like, damned if you do, you know, you put yourself in the poorhouse because you bought a really expensive little tiny booth, or you just don't go at all. Or you do like what Devolver Digital does and just rents out a parking lot across the street.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and like E3 still has that sort of exclusive feeling, like, as opposed to you're talking about Tokyo Game Show, a PAX, for example. Those feel more like gamer-centric events, and E3 mm-hmm. still feels like, you know, I mean, it went to the public, and then it went to the industry insiders, and then it went back to the public, but it still feels like an insider place.
It does. I mean, there's still that sort of, like, it does, but it's also still, I think it's also the pricing that sort of does it too.
Yeah.
Because of how much it is to get in there. I mean, like, I don't remember what they said the tickets were last time, but it was like $700 or something. And like, to be honest, it's like, yo, $700 to just wait on a line? But I don't know about that. Like, you know, just going to a normal Comic-Con, what is that, like 75 or less?
It's definitely not that.
It's like 75, maybe, you know, or a little bit more than that, like maybe 100 or something like that. Still a lot of money, but I mean, like, you're not getting any, you're blowing $700 on this to go to this convention, and you don't get anything for it. You stand on a bunch of lines. There's no guarantee that you're going to do any of this sort of stuff. And it's like, you guys are kind of doing it wrong. If we're gonna be in celebration mode, if we're gonna be like, gives people something, you know?
Yeah.
They sell all these silly T-shirts and all kinds of E3 swag and all that stuff. Pop some of that shit in a bag when somebody gets a ticket or picks up their ticket if they're gonna be a regular goer, instead of just like the minute that like you walk in the room and it's like, okay, lines.
Yeah.
But I don't know. You're looking back at it and you're like, okay, you can fix this and this. But I definitely think, like, if they really want to be able to be embraced by both the media and the influencers as well as the fans, I think they definitely need to make it a lot more worthwhile to just regular Joe. You know,
they should. I don't know. This is just an idea. They should also have like a specific places where they can watch the in the show floor or somewhere near there where people can watch the press conferences too, because that's like what people don't notice is that that's an important part of what E3 is, and a lot of people that go there are not invited into these conferences. Mm-hmm. So some people are just like, Well, to me, the most important thing is watching the press conferences, and I don't even get to go there. So why am I going to fly to LA just so I can
just to go to wait on a line and not really see any of the sort of press conferences that are happening while you're in there?
Exactly. You're trying to stream it through the shitty Wi-Fi on the hotel room, you know. So it's like,
oh yeah. Yeah, that's what we were doing, like a couple of times on the, you know, not the Nintendo one, but some of the other ones that we didn't attend to. We just kind of watched. What was it? I think we watched, me, Chris, and Tony watched the Bethesda one, the one Adam Sestler was on. Yeah. We were literally watching that at the Smash Burger on my fucking cell phone.
Yeah. I mean, I remember it was 2 years ago we were doing the live streams here, and and you joined us, Manny. You were like in a coffee place.
Yeah, I went to the Starbucks. I was literally sitting next to Robert Workman because apparently we couldn't get into the EA thing, the EA event. So they turned us away. So like I was like, okay, what do I do myself? Because Tony's in there.
Yeah.
So I just went, you know what? I'm just going to go to the local coffee shop and see what's on there and see if I can call in.
It's crazy, man.
Man, but it's funny. Like, this is like slightly off topic. Like, sitting next to Robert, like, and he's working. Yeah. Like, that dude is insanely fast. Like, he's literally like talking. He's like, you know, talking to his guys on the thing while they're doing the thing. Yeah. And literally, as soon as one of the stories shows up, he's like, "All right, it's up."
Damn.
Like, shit. He literally wrote a whole article sitting right there, not long at all. Just killed it.
You Adam, I have a question for you. Since you're since you're more involved, you know, you're part of the industry now. What do you think about what do you think about this? Do you still? Because I know, even like someone like myself, I used to have all these, you know, ambitions to want to go to E3, and a lot of it has died in the past couple of years. And I'm wondering, you're kind of getting your feet wet back again to the industry. What do you think?
It's just to meet people. That's it. It's just to make these contacts. There's a lot of publishers that I've been emailing back and forth with now, and just getting to know certain reps. And it's all about just meeting them face to face and developing that connection. When it comes to the games to play, I don't care. I'm gonna play them eventually. You know, I don't feel like I need to go there to wait online. It's all about making these appointments, going out there, shaking hands, meeting, just creating that connection. It's networking. So I see the plus side on the networking aspect, but when it comes to the games, if I don't see it. So for me, I see it as a big event, do the networking, parlay, do all that, and that's it. But when it comes to the games, I'm not excited for it. I've done that back in the day, and it's just too many people. It's always been a lot of people. You wait online, you go, you play, then people get sick, you go touch the controller, it's all wet and greasy and shit. Yeah, I remember one time it distracted me. It was a Comic-Con, and I remember I brought my wife, who were dating at the time, in New York, and we went to the Comic-Con, and I went to, Rockstar did have a booth there for Red Dead Undead Nightmares, Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, Undead. I remember that.
Yeah, so I waited on this long-ass fucking line to finally get up to it, and there's a rep standing there, and it's like, okay, you ready? Now I'll tell you how to play. Are you familiar with it? I'm like, yeah. He hands me the controller, and I'm telling you, it's as if it was just like taken out of water. It was like dipped. I was like, this is disgusting. So he's talking to me, and I'm trying to play. At the same time, I'm thinking about this shit that's dripping between my fingers. And then I'm trying to wipe my hands. Then I'm like, I'm wiping. I don't even know what that is. I'm like, then I was like, well, maybe it's cleaner. Maybe
it's hand sanitizer.
Sanitizer. Maybe he already had wiped it, but still, it's all over my hands. And he's talking to me, and he's like, all right, so now, as you see here, you have the coffins. You can light them on fire. Okay, now turn around. This guy there. And I'm like, it was too much going on. And then there was a clock. He's looking at his watch. And then once I did one part, he's like, okay, thanks. Thanks for playing. He just pulled out my hands and next. I'm like, I waited for like 45 minutes to play, like not even 5 minutes.
that's pretty much what E3 was like, at least a lot of the open to the public stuff was. When they were closed down, it was a little bit different, where there were still lines, but there were also still like, there were like things you could go to and, you know, do report on stuff like that. But it's been years since I've actually fully reported on E3. I mean, 2014 was the last time that I was actually industry at E3, and all the rest of it was all just was press. Game journal, was press. And then after that, I've always been have been pro or stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, hopefully they get it together. I know Brett was like, "This is the celebration. This is the greatest thing ever." Maybe it is something because I've gone there. But then even you guys are saying like, it's not looking like something you want to do, you know?
Yeah, and they wouldn't release this press release or whatever this is. But if their backs weren't on the wall.
Yeah.
So they know that they don't really have that much to work with, and it's danger zone for them.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, I want to give a quick shout out to PacDan16 for subscribing.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Man. Thanks a lot. So yeah, we'll just move on to the next one. What we have here is the Nintendo Switch sales. Well, actually, Nintendo's actually put out all of their sales thing. They put out a big old funny fancy site and all that stuff. They're really proud of it this time around. It's not like the other time around where they're just like, okay, they just slipped you a PDF and then you're good. But so we're just going to talk about it a little bit. Actually, on the Sunday show, we're going to go probably into a little bit more detail because Chris is usually our numbers guy, and he's going to look at the previous stuff and do his usual stuff. So can't wait for that. But yeah, we'll just talk about the general sales of this. From what this article says that we have here, which is I think what was a Kotaku, right? Did we
get Polygon.
Polygon. Well, same difference, right? No. Oh, yeah. But yeah, from that, they're essentially saying that at the current rate that the Nintendo Switch is selling, it's selling faster than a DS, which is nuts.
It's freaking crazy. There's only one console that it's not selling more than at a faster pace than at the rate that were released, and that's the Wii. We already know why the Wii was selling like hotcakes, because they were doing the artificial scarcity. Switch, on the other hand, has not had that.
No, I don't. At no point do I remember there being any sort of shortage or people saying they couldn't get it. Not like the Nintendo Mini,
mm-hmm.
where they were like, "No, we can't get it anymore." This time it's just like they, you go, like even now, you just go to a Target or any store that sells electronics, and you'll find yourself a Switch.
And it's outpacing the PlayStation 4 as well.
Yep,
it's crazy, man.
It's gonna get there. And what I was surprised at seeing the numbers for the Lite, I think it was like 5 million units sold or something like that. And I'm like, really? The Lite version? Because the Lite, it's a smaller screen.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't offer. And I guess, and I talked about it before, that it would be great for kids to play.
I think that's
price point and the fact it's small. They don't care. It's for the kids.
Yeah, I think that that's the big thing. It's like, okay, I'm not going to give little Jimmy the super expensive Switch that they could literally accidentally break the controllers or step on them and stuff. You just give them the whole complete unit and they'll go out with that one.
Yeah, it's what's crazy? It's something that I was reading. And it's like, what? And I'm probably naive for this, but it outsold the Super Nintendo. The Super Nintendo only sold 49 million units.
Yeah, I'm like, that's pretty, what? I mean, but the thing about it, if you think about it, like the game industry then to now is a lot different. There's a lot more people into gaming now than there was then, which is crazy.
Yeah.
Like you think that's probably one of the most successful, one of the nostalgia wise or whatever, time wise, you think, okay, Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
That thing probably sold billions, but not really.
Yeah. Well, I expected, maybe 90 to 100 million because, the Super Nintendo and the Sega were pretty much zeitgeist systems when they were out. Mm-hmm. Those were the two games in town.
It's funny because if you look at the Sega Genesis numbers, it did well.
Yeah.
But it didn't do that well.
Well, I'm looking at the Nintendo, the NES numbers, and I'm like, even those shock me. 61 million.
That's nuts.
Yeah, yeah, well, the 61 million is for the family computer, the Famicom, right?
Yeah, it's slash NES, yeah.
Yeah, and then, yeah, is that? Oh, yeah, because it's the Japanese site.
Yeah.
Okay. Super Family Computer! Right.
Hey, I don't. I still have that. Have that on my arcade warm. I threw all of those.
Plus the Famicom
game. Yeah, they had some good games on there. Modified versions. A lot of them, like a kid, they had a modified version of Splatterhouse. It's pretty fun.
Now it's funny. Like, so is it? I'm trying to get this a little bit. This is worldwide sales, right?
Yeah,
yeah. This is definitely worldwide sales because it shows the Wii and it has 101 million.
Yeah.
Okay. And the DS 154 million, but you know the DS they kept that thing running for what, a decade maybe? It's some long ass time.
Yeah, it's funny because and look, it doesn't actually include all the versions of the DS here though. On the picture though, it just shows the two last ones. But the DS was that big silver thing, the big wonky silver thing that came out?
Yeah,
they don't even show that thing.
Yeah, it was the DS and the 3DS. Those are, I guess, the two separating SKUs between generations for them.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I usually am not interested in game sales and system sales, but I want the Switch to be very successful, so it makes me happy hearing the new sales numbers. Hey, yeah, man, they're doing good.
They're doing well. It's funny, like, I just think about how on the DL they were about the Wii U. Yeah. You know, they didn't even really, they didn't fully, the semi-release numbers. It's kind of like, it's like, oh, come on, guys. But then again, I guess, again, those sorts of releasing kind of weak numbers kind of often doesn't bode so well for the, you know, like they don't want to show that they're weak in some way. So they're just going to kind of hide it a little bit, you know, dig for it a little bit. Like, wait a minute. Hold on. See what you're doing there.
Yeah, 13 million. Oh, that's pretty bad.
13 million. Didn't even, let's see, what was it? What's there is, wow, it is literally their lowest selling console. Everything in here, like the low, like the one above that is actually the GameCube. Again, one of the kind of, yeah. Well, everything else.
One thing they're omitting from these things, and I'm surprised, you know, this is a Virtual Boy. Where's the old Virtual Boy?
They're like, that's not even worth mentioning.
That's been deleted from the archives of Alexandria, you know? That's
yeah, they're just like, nah, we don't talk about him.
Yeah, so they released like a whole bunch of hardware numbers, and they also released the software numbers. And those are pretty interesting, man. The freaking Pokemon, goddamn.
Pokemon killing them. I'm surprised. Well, I shouldn't say I'm surprised. I'm sure there's a lot of, I guess because as I get older, you know, I'm like, oh, I'm not interested in that, but it still produces a whole new generation of fans. There's people that still follow it. I don't know how they obtain all that information, because when I was younger, it was in your face. They had the toys and they had the TV show. Is any of that stuff available for kids today to just
pick Pokemon that type of stuff up? Yeah, Pokemon stuff, yeah, it's all over the place. You can go and buy that stuff. Yeah.
I'm sure that the TV show is still on as well. Like,
yeah, TV still shows on. Oh, yeah. It's funny. Oh, good.
Yeah. At least through Pokemon Go, like the toys are there. Because I remember that last month, or last year, around September, October. Well, at least here in the UK, they had like an event where they opened like a Pokemon store in Westfield. Hmm. And people just went crazy. Like, queues were like going like outside the shop. Like, people actually just went there, like, queued up for, like, 4 hours just for, like, a plushie. I'm like, dude, there's Amazon.
I don't even think there's a Pokemon store in New York.
Oh, yeah, there is.
There's a Nintendo store.
It was the Pokemon Center years ago. In fact, if you go there, you know, then the doors and everything, the doors are still Pokemon balls.
Okay.
To open the doorknobs.
Nobody's taking over that spot?
No, it's only Nintendo. They turned the Pokemon Center into the Nintendo store. But here's the funny thing. So, like, out of all these different generations that they're showing on here, right? You want to know the one similarity within most of the kind of high, you know, the a lot of the consoles here? Mario Kart is the top selling game on each one of them.
I'm still upset. Where is all this new content? Remember, was it last year they had talked about that they wanted to bring new DLC to this because they see how popular the game is and they have a big audience now and blah, blah, blah. All right, so give us something new. That never happened. They're like, I guess they forget it. I'm like, it's selling it's funny. The way it is. So.
Smash Brothers, which is the second most highest Switch selling Switch game, that one has a bunch of DLC. They have like a DLC for it.
They freaking release new characters.
I picked up Terry. Yeah.
Like crazy.
It's interesting that the Mario Kart is just like the highest. I underestimated Mario Kart. 22 million.
22 million. 22.9 million. It's pretty much 23 million.
Yeah, 23, almost 23 million.
That's bananas.
Even on the Wii U, which is not even they're low numbers they put on here. with 8.44 million.
So I guess they're separating the numbers between Wii U and Switch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even the DS one sold better than the one on the Wii U. Mario Kart 7 is insane.
Yeah, the crazy thing here is Pokemon has sold 16 million copies since it came out to the end of the year. That's freaking nuts, man.
Yeah. But it's funny, then you look at the Zelda numbers. Yeah. Like, they're so close. Like, okay, Super Mario Odyssey, Zelda, the Legend of Zelda, and Pokemon all have very close numbers, like 16 million, you know, give or take. Yeah. Mario Odyssey is above Legend of Zelda. But now, Pokemon did that in a year.
No, right? It did less than a year.
Less than a year. Yeah, and months. Then in a few months, it literally, like essentially... evened with both Mario Odyssey and the Zelda.
It's going to be the top selling game for the Switch before the year's over.
Yeah, it's not bad. Well, all those people are saying, "Oh, the game has been cut down." Doesn't seem to matter much, does it?
No, oh, yeah. It's crazy, man. I mean, and the right below that is Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee, which wasn't even like a fully fledged Pokemon game.
No, it's just a remake.
Yep. So it's, man, their attachment rate is crazy. I mean, Luigi's Mansion 3, which came out last year, also I think it came out maybe November ish. I think October, November.
It was very close to Pokemon.
Yeah, it was. Shield. 5.37 million. It's like, man. I mean, not even freaking PlayStation exclusives do this well.
No.
If you think about it, I mean, God of War and Spider-Man, like those are like the high bars for the PlayStation, and they're probably like around 8 to 10 million after a year.
Something like that. But it's funny because it's the thing about it is that it's like, yeah, it's just like the support that the Nintendo, you know, once everybody's on board with Nintendo, everybody goes and picks it up. Yeah. It's interesting. It's a little bit like, you know, to say this, it's a little bit like the way the PSP and the Vita sales were a little bit.
Yeah.
Where it was like everybody who owned a PlayStation Portable or a Vita literally bought most of the game, a lot of the games that came out for it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
You know, it's funny though. I play my Vita, I mean, my Switch every day. Every day I put it some time. But when we released our numbers and I was seeing all the games I was playing when we got that report. Now all I play is third-party games. I play a lot of third-party games. Like today, I was playing a lot of Diablo 3. Still, just going back into that when I'm not doing that, Blazing Chrome or
Astral Chain.
Riverside Girls. You know, just playing other things. I still haven't played Astral Chain. Mm-hmm. I play a lot of beat 'em up stuff like that. Yeah,
really? Man's good.
Yeah, maybe I'll get into that. But it's just funny because here it is. I see all these big titles. Mario Kart's always fun every once in a while. But
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Breath of the Wild, I put in not even 10 hours. I just couldn't get into it. I don't know what it
was. Yeah, I put in like 10, 15 hours to that.
And Mario Odyssey, ran around. I got to whatever planet with the spaceship. And I was like, okay, I've seen it. You know, I was collecting some outfits. And then, I don't know, I just got bored with it.
But I noticed that a lot of the games that you're sort of playing on, they're a little bit smaller experiences, right?
Yeah, it's that.
You're not going for these like 50,000 hour sort of experiences. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, it's a little bit, beat them up, and then you know you do your thing. Like
the one that I finished that put in a good amount of time, and that was on my list, was the Marvel Ultimate Alliance. But even then, it's like small chunks. Like I would go clear out an area, do a save, and then go to work or do something else, and then come back to it. It's mm-hmm. like I. I see some people getting hooked on like Harvest Moon and those type of things. Like,
yeah, I'm not into that sort of stuff. But I mean, some people just love those sorts of like. I mean, you know, it's a good time waster, especially if you have your thing with you, right? You know,
yeah.
And you have one of those little tinier, smaller games. I mean, that's
the other thing. I hate the Joy-Cons. I don't like the Joy-Cons, and I don't like carrying a Pro controller. But I like my APDU, the SNES Pro 30. It's fucking awesome.
Love so that. Is that why? So you just like plop that on your little table, like?
That's exactly. I do tabletop. I have my little stand. Mm-hmm. Pop it up. Put it up, boom, boom, boom. Pair it up. Just turn it on. I'm good to go.
Yeah,
good I'm with stuff. You, man. Those Joy-Cons.
Can't do it. I have big hands, and I know there's other little attachments, and I put little rubber guards that have a little back piece for the palm. I've tried different things; it just don't work.
Hey, Brian,
what's up?
Do you like? I don't think you've ever talked about this. Maybe you have. I don't know. I forget. Do you play? Do you like to play it on the? I know you do. You said you would like to play a portable mode, right? Your mm-hmm. Switch. What do you think about the Joy-Cons?
They exist. That's a start. They are okay. They're okay if you're using them like one by like in co-op mode, where it's like one person has one. Yeah. I think that's all right. It's not too bad. But when like attached on, then it's just. They really do crap after a while. I think my longest I've gone is just under an hour and a half, and then my hands just start to cramp up like mad. So, yeah.
If I'm playing a game that just requires one thumbstick, if it's just the left and I'm just shooting or whatever with the random buttons on the right side, I'm okay. But as soon as I play a game that requires me to use the other one, the other thumbstick, I can't do it. My hands just cramp up. I can't move my thumb down or for a long period of time in that position.
So did you have the same issue with the Vita too, right?
Yeah, the Vita. In fact, that's what I have out here. So you can take a look. I had to get this attachment piece, you see? And it had like the grips where it sort of felt like holding a DualShock.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you had the like the extenders on the
bottom. Yeah, so it sticks it out so that way I can put my hands out more, mm-hmm. like I'm holding it in that position. And this seemed to help. And I know they made something similar for the Switch, but at that point, I'm like, I already have my APDU that I use, and that's fine for me.
Yeah. So another funky thing about this financial report was they mentioned how much their mobile department was doing, and obviously, Chris will look into this a little bit more deeper. But apparently, their highest grossing. The highest grossing title on their mobile was Fire Emblem at 1 billion.
That's
for their mobile division.
Yen?
I think it's dollars.
Oh, damn.
I think it is. At least from what this thing says. Yeah. That's insane. Like, no wonder they're doing this shit.
Yeah. I mean, they also released Fire Emblem on the Switch this year or this past year.
Yeah, they just recently put it out there. That is insane. It's so like nuts. It's like I guess it was a good thing a good thing for them to do that, right?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, everything they're doing now is just like can't do any wrong.
They could do something wrong, like what they did with the Mario Kart Tour, where it's a subscription service. Nobody wants that shit. They don't want a subscription service to play Mario Kart on. Phone and tablets.
So, like, the thing about the Fire Emblem game is, as I remember, I think it's a free game, as I remember, right? And I think Fire Emblem Heroes accounts for 656 million or 61% of Nintendo's mobile revenue. So they made 1 billion in there, and okay, so the majority of the 1 billion comes from. Fire Emblem Heroes. They did okay. So Fire Emblem Heroes didn't do it on its own, but it's the majority of it, which is insane.
Yeah, it's the overwhelming majority of it. It's more than 50%.
Yep, 61%.
Just one fucking IP. I mean, they still have that Mario Runner thing.
The lousy Mario game that they put on there.
They're still charging for that.
But I mean, like, to be honest, like, you know, I know Nintendo fans are all like, man, you know, Nintendo is the greatest thing. It's on its own. Man, they'd be able to make so much more money if they were just making shit for everything else.
Oh, yeah. I mean, their Nintendo first party is just notorious for, you know, it's how well it sells and its polish. You know, everyone can rely on those games to be good.
That's true. Remember, they had the seal. They should bring that seal back. I think that'd be fun. But
oh, the Nintendo seal of approval.
I miss those seals.
But it didn't mean anything because
it didn't mean anything. But it was just still that, you know, that just feeling, bring it back. That false feeling of wow, this is quality.
This is quality. So yeah, moving on. We're gonna actually stay on the Nintendo thing. So Nintendo has squashes the real life Mario Kart. So for those of you now, I can't remember if we talked about this in the past, but in Japan there is a live action Mario Kart. Essentially, you rent. They have this one company that essentially rents a kart to you, and you essentially drive around Japan in Mario Kart.
I've seen them. I went. Yep, yeah, it's funny, man.
So Nintendo has kind of had a long standing, court case with them, because what would happen is that they would close down the place. Well, say they went out of business and then open up under a new name.
Yeah.
So they've been doing that for years now. So it's like, you know, they've been changing slight things and just like, so now officially Nintendo got them, and they got them way worse.
Damn.
Because way worse than what they originally were going to do, because of one thing, because of the nature of it, it attracts a lot of foreigners.
Yes.
So that's what it. So they were able to. It was just what was it? What did they say here?
Pagdense's super lawsuit cart.
Yeah, super lawsuit cart. So yeah, it's they awarded 50 million yen or roughly 5 million in damages.
Sheesh.
Yeah, for this one company, because obviously they're reusing their IP, as well as, you know, essentially they're picking names that sound like Mario Kart ish names.
Oh, 500,000.
500,000. Excuse me. 500,000. But that's insane. Was it what they called it? Mari Car Tokyo. That's what they call it now. But it had three other names. But finally, they got these. It's you know, Nintendo should really just fucking steal the idea.
I know, right?
Well, instead of just I don't know. I mean, like,
well, here's the thing. I don't think it would be that great of an idea, because I mean, I've seen these things before. Like, I was in the Akihabara, and I was in a bar. And it was like late at night, and I just see these people, like, they're all dressed up as Mario characters on these go-karts just driving around the city. And I'm like, yeah, if Nintendo did this and someone got into an accident, forget about it.
I mean, yeah, there'd definitely be a liability on that sort of stuff. I don't even understand how they're able to do it in general, because they don't – well, I mean, again, I'm thinking of it in the United States terms.
Yeah.
But they don't allow carts to drive around in the United States.
No, I mean, you can't. Anything on the streets have to have turning signals. That's the thing. Do the cars have turning signals on them?
Well, I mean,
I don't know.
Because if they do, then turn a video technically on. They can.
Apparently, they do have them. Yeah,
they do.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, they so that need, that's it. That's all you need. That's all.
Well,
you
I mean,
need.
And it is also, you know, Japan standards. So we don't know what kind of laws they have when it comes to getting things street legal.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they're there. I saw them a couple of times, and it's like it looked like a fucking fun time.
Yes, this one video that they're showing on here, like DualShockers, they're showing how these guys sort of weirdly guide them around the city. But I mean, like, I guess it's equivalent to like riding a scooter. You know, like, you don't need a driver's license to ride a scooter in the city.
And the speed, it's all about the speed. You do need one if you're driving in the city, depending on the scooter and if it can go over 60 miles an hour.
Mm.
So if it goes over 60 miles an hour, then yes, you need a license. And also, you can't take a scooter onto a highway. It has to be just for the street.
Oh yeah, this shit. They look like they're going on the highway.
Oh yeah, they're on the streets.
They can't.
Yep,
they're on the. It looks like there's like a runoff that they do at some point.
Some Tokyo Drift shit, man.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, it's a, you know, I hear, and I've watched a little documentary about this. Apparently, Nintendo is very, very strict when it comes to their copyright in Japan, like even worse than certain things in the United States. Like a lot of times in the obviously in the United States, there's a lot of people doing things that they sell, like they sell things with licensed characters on there. And most companies, especially depending on the quantity, they don't really bug. But in Japan, it's a lot different. They'll come after a small guy. I've heard of stories where, like, a lot of Japanese manga artists, like, that are sort of well known, they don't actually, you know, like at a New York Comic Con or anything like that, they'll sometimes, you know, you'll get asked to draw a famous character, but they're not allowed to draw any sort of famous characters for money. So they're like, so the way they usually lock these things down, they're like, okay, yeah, I can't do this. I can only really draw characters that I've designed or whatever. And they just lock it down at that. You can't get a Kuratoriyama. Let's just say, for the sake of conversation, you can't get a Kuratoriyama to draw JoJo's Bizarre Adventure character.
Right.
That ain't happening. So, yeah. So they're pretty strict when it comes to this sort of stuff. They'll come after small guys. And there's a lot of bars out in Japan that I've heard that, you know, kind of do and deal in sort of retro games. So they'll have a bunch of retro games, you know, retro consoles and stuff. You can play them while you're there and have a beer or whatever. Little fun hangout spots, kind of like Barcode almost. But a lot of the
Barcade.
Barcade.
Well, sure. There was Barcode, remember? There was Barcode.
Barcode. So Barcade or Barcode or a couple of the other places that are out there where, you know, it's a bar, but you can also have fun, play video game consoles and stuff. In Japan, a lot of these places are dealing with issues because the big companies are like, no, how come we're not getting any money off of this? And they kind of close them down.
Right.
And there's very strict rules on the way they do it. Ugh. Anyway, yeah, that's unfortunate. But, you know, these guys knew what they were doing. They were going to get fucking slapped in the face no matter what, right?
Yeah, it's surprising that they lasted this long.
Yeah, it is surprising that they lasted this long. But, yeah.
And, I mean, if they've made more than 500,000 in revenue, like if it's well over 500,000, I guess maybe it's worth it.
Imagine they just like, all right, $500, they throw it at Nintendo and then they just do it again. They rename themselves and they come back up again.
Yeah, it's like, gotta make sure to make over 100,000 again. We're good.
Well, it's funny because I deal with a lot of these emulation handhelds that come out of China. Mm-hmm. And most of them come preloaded with Nintendo and Super Nintendo games. And even on the box, it says it's preloaded. So how come they just don't go after them? I mean, you can find this stuff on Alibaba. Some of these things are also on Amazon.
I think the biggest thing about it is because they can, for this situation, they have a business that they can get to. Like, in other words, on the back of this bootleg shit, they don't have the address to the place where they actually, you know, manufactured it or anything. And there's a whole bunch of like Chinese places that are all, I mean, the weird thing about China is that everything is made there. And it's so easy to essentially bootleg it because literally you can just probably go to one of the other places like, hey, give me that sculpt for the Sega Genesis. Yeah, we'll just use that and stick some junk inside of it. You know?
Ms. Razor says, Adam, check your PS app for messages.
Uh-oh.
Excuse me?
Got some messages?
You mean you got messages?
Are we getting hate mail? Yeah.
All right. So the next one. And this is through some tweets that Phil Spencer has done on his social media. Essentially, it looks like Uncle Phil is actually going out and, you know, specifically, you know, trying to make deals with Japanese studios to create games for the Xbox service or whatever. What do they call it? Ecosystem.
The Xbox ecosystem.
Xbox ecosystem. So, he's like saying like stuff like, hey, you know, there's some really great stuff. And we're talking about the new Xbox series. And, you know, this is actually really cool to hear Definitely, you know, when you think about the original Xbox, that's part of what they did in the beginning. They tried to kind of get the ear of a lot of the Japanese developers. And the other thing about it is because Xbox is now more of an ecosystem than a console, I feel like in this situation, it'll probably make things a little bit make this stuff a little bit easier to do, because now they don't, you know, because it's, again, notoriously Xboxes don't do very well in Japan. But if it's a service, what, it doesn't matter what you're on, you know, right? You're on your.
The phone is a booth. But then it comes down to just that loyalty to Japanese companies. People just have that loyalty that I think even if the games are great, and remember, they tried. They had Blue Dragon, Sonata. They had some really good games and big name developers mm-hmm. or people behind them, and it just didn't work.
Yeah, like Dead Rising. And stuff like that.
You gotta also think about it. The reason also why Microsoft hasn't garnered the loyalty and respect from a Japanese consumer is because they haven't been as consistent with, you know, the production of the Japanese titles, you know, the ones that most people over there would enjoy. They've had their spurts. Yep. They've had their Xbox 360 spurts where they had, like, those, you know, Lost Odyssey, Tales, mm-hmm. Blue Dragon, and then it's kind of like it just disappeared after that, and there's been, like, little spikes here and there. But it's, I think, I don't know. The more I think about it, I don't know if it's necessarily, you know, oh, it's a Japanese product, so we're getting that. Because I know a lot of Japanese people are fond of iPhones, mm-hmm. and iPhones are nothing to do with Japanese company, and it's an American company. So for the consoles, I think people are just, you know, are just, they understand the PlayStation brand and the Nintendo brand, and they know what they're going to get when they buy these consoles. No one knows what people are going to get from an Xbox console, not even us that are Westerners. I mean, me and Adam were 360 loyalists.
Yeah.
And we made the Switch, and we went to PS4, and it's like, you know, we don't know what to expect from Microsoft. So why would a Japanese mm-hmm. person know what to expect from Microsoft, a foreign company that's trying to owe peace to them?
Plus, I think it didn't help that when they launched the first Xbox, the Duke controller was massive.
Yeah.
That was a serious issue.
That thing could have chopped trees, man.
Yeah, because I remember it came up. They sent a rep to figure out how they can boost sales in Japan, and they heard stories. It was like, well, the controller's too big. It's like, what do you mean? And then they saw some of the people there, normal average-sized people, they're putting in their hands, and they're like, we can't reach these buttons. It's just not for them. And he's like, oh, wow, you're right. And then that's when they redesigned the controller.
It's funny because that second version of the Xbox controller, that's the one that they pretty much use now. It's the same design.
It's a little bigger. Because the ones, remember I had the green ones, the Hulk ones? I had mm-hmm. a bunch of
yeah,
them.
It was the
and
Hulk
it was smaller.
One. Yep.
Yeah. And the then when the 360 came out, it just took that form and just made it a little larger.
Mm-hmm. They made it smaller.
They made it
smaller. It made it bigger.
Smaller.
You sure?
From the Xbox to the 360?
Yeah, I mean, so the Xbox, the Duke, right?
Yes.
And then we had the smaller version.
Yes,
when they
the Duke Lite.
Still for the Duke Lite. Then the 360 came, and it was like an in-between, but it still had that form factor.
Oh, it was smaller.
I have them somewhere.
Because
I felt like it was more.
Because the one I used the most from the original Xbox was the second, like the Duke controller. As soon as the second one came out, the Duke controller went away. That shit, you know, I don't even know where it is. It's lost.
Duke is dead.
It's lost. The Duke is dead.
The Duke is dead. You know, but I started using the other one most primarily, even when the 360 came out, because I was still playing Halo 2. Mm-hmm. And that controller was bigger than the 360 ones, because I always remember the 360 one being smaller. But then again, I haven't. You know,
it's smaller than the Duke. But it's
definitely smaller than Duke.
It's larger than the green little Hulk ones that they did. Because I remember I had both of them, and I was like, oh, wow, this doesn't feel right. It feels a little bigger, but it wasn't as big as the Duke. And it wasn't wider. It was thicker at the bottom, because that was the thing. It had more of a grip for it, and it just felt right. Man, I love that controller.
I used to love it. The only thing I wasn't too fond of was the color buttons.
Oh, yeah.
Because they were kind of like, you know, on the side, and it's like sometimes they got annoying to press.
The original Duke had that one extra button. Like, yeah, it had those two extra, the six buttons at the end.
It had the white and black up at the white top, and black. And they were pretty high up.
Yeah.
And it was definitely an interesting D-pad because it had a dip. So your thumb would like dip into it. So it's within the D-pad. And I guess they felt that it was going to have better control and stuff, but it sucked for fighting games.
Remember,
well, I mean, really the thing is that, like, around. I think for fighting games in general, you do want a little bit of a dip in that control in the center. But yeah, I definitely think that it wasn't liked that much. I think, again, once they got to 360, that's when they kind of got a better controller on there.
Even when the X1, the original, the launch one, I hate it. I hate that controller.
The Duke controller? And
no, for the Xbox One, when that came out. My launch one, and it was like that controller, the way it felt, and then you need to get that little dongle just to get the headsets to work.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, the worst part of that controller, I still have that controller, the worst part of the controller are the shoulder buttons. The shoulder buttons, like, it seemed like they were stuck. You have to press them in a specific...
Oh, Adam's digging into the arch of the company.
This is a newer one. Yeah, this is the S model. This one I really love.
Great. Yep,
what do you mean? So the shoulder buttons.
Is that one of the ones that you can customize the colors and all that stuff?
You could, yeah. Yes. And then this one also had just a straight plug-in. So mm-hmm. you just plug in your headset.
You
don't have to worry about the dongle.
The butter Xbox One controller is the one that's matte in the front, you know, where the Xbox button is. Like, the original one came out glossy.
Yeah.
But then when they came out matte, the matte finish, those were the butter ones.
This one, I really like the way this one feels. This one makes me happy.
I'm looking for my Xbox controller. It's not here.
Yo, man, where's the Xbox controller?
I got a bunch of controllers.
Yo, man, that's the exclusive right there is colored controllers.
Hey, that's something a lot of people are requesting and hoping that PlayStation, that Sony does. Because when is that going to happen? Because I could understand wanting to customize something, but definitely if you're into those clan battles, you're playing with your buddies, you're in that type of environment where you do that, you want your names written on the controllers, and, you know, that type of thing. That's kind of cool.
When they first introduced that, I was at the E3. Excuse me, that year, and I really thought that was one of the coolest things for it. You essentially go to their website and you just kind of design your own version of the controller.
All the parts, the buttons, you could do whatever you want. You make the most hideous looking thing and no one's going to question it. They'll just make the shit for you.
It's funny because nowadays, Microsoft has the corner on that customizable controller deal that they have. Yeah. But it's funny, all the PlayStation ones are all third party stuff. Like, all the sites that you find out there, they're all third-party companies that make customized PlayStation 4 controllers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They're pretty much doing it the same way. They're buying a bunch of controllers and then just taking the parts.
Yeah.
Because they're very expensive. Some of them are like $200, but they're like, hey, you want the orange buttons? You want some... Mm-hmm. You want to do the whole little... Yeah.
If I'm being honest, I still don't understand how people can say that the DualShock 4 is better than the Xbox One controller.
They haven't spent time with the Xbox One controller. The Xbox One S controller, we should say. The S.
Yeah, the S controller. Yeah. Or, I mean, I use the Elite controller.
Oh, look at you. Balling.
Yo, man, you know how I roll.
Did you hear that the new one is missing a button?
What?
Yeah, so there's a new... So we've seen the footage for the Xbox Series X, right? You've seen the pictures. It's going to say footage. They're sort of footage. But you can see the picture. You'll see there's an extra button. There's a new button that they have there. That's not on the new Elite. So then that means that would they have to release another Elite to have that additional button?
Oh, man.
Yeah, take a look at that image. You'll see there's another button. I don't know if that's a media button or something. There's a new button they show on that controller. And people were flipping out because they're like, well, I just spent all this money on the new Elite and that doesn't have that button. Hmm. So then, yes, you could obviously, like they said, all your hardware can port over to the Series X, but damn, you won't have that function for that one button.
I mean, that's what the rumor is they see about that toggle thing on the back of the PlayStation 4 controller is. That is essentially a sort of introduction to what's going to be happening.
The attachment
thing. Yeah, the attachment thing. Yeah.
Is anybody going to get that?
I think it's a little too late. No.
Yeah,
it's like $20 or something like that.
It's yeah, it's not that expensive, but
no,
right. I think he's right. I think it's the whole idea is like, hey, you're interested in it, but you don't want to shell out the money for like the scuff or whatever it was. So then, hey, why not just pick $20, $30, pick this up, see if you like it. Because if you do, surprise, surprise,
that's a new one.
Well, maybe. Well,
I mean, here's the thing: like, it does sort of, if you think about it, it does sort of guarantee that you're all the, you know, because I just recently bought a new PlayStation 4 controller for my, you know, because the holiday sale, right?
Yeah.
And I'm it's the gunmetal gray looking one. It's really cool looking. And like, yeah, once you flip over to the new one, you might be missing a couple buttons if things are going the way everybody sort of thinks it is, right?
And they tend to skip out on certain things, because I remember when they were like, oh, guess what? Your DualShock 4 will also play on your PS3. Remember that? They were like, yeah, and I'm excited for it. There's no way to get to the home button. The home button doesn't work for the PS4 to get into PS3, so you still need a PS3, or you just like, crash your game so you can get to the menu, because there's no way to get back.
It worked for me when I tried it. I tried it recently.
You tried it, and it responded. So while you were in the game, while you were playing in the game, you pressed the home, and it took you back.
You know what? I didn't try that specific.
That's the issue. While you're in the game, and then you press it, you can't get out.
I need to try it, because I remember, Manny, I was getting the Metal Gear collection, the Metal Gear 1 on the PSP. Mm-hmm. So I had to turn on my PS3 for like the first time in like 4 years.
Isn't
or something.
That crazy? Isn't yeah. that crazy? And it doesn't even do it on the PS4. You had to do PS3.
Well, I know, and then.
It's a weird go around because you can't go through the store to do it. You got to go through a couple.
Oh, yeah. I had to do it for Def Jam, because I realized I didn't have Def Jam on there. And I'm like, oh, I want my Def Jam 5 from New York. How do I get on there? Oh, you got to do this whole thing. I had to go dig out my PS3, plug the shit in, you know, sync the whole thing up so that way I can go and get it, because there's no way to access that information from the PS4, which makes no sense.
Well, and then all my PS3 controllers were dead on arrival, or dead on whatever they were standing in, and I was like, God damn it! And then someone on because we were streaming Monster Hunter, someone told me, it's like, yeah, you can use your PS4 controller. And I'm like, really?
Yeah. Like, but it's just when you get into the games and try to get out, that's where
I never started a game. That's the thing. I should try it next time.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if they updated it, but when you originally bought the PlayStation 4 controller, they said, yeah, you could use it on there, but you had to have it plugged in or some silliness, or you had to synchronize it in some specific way. Like the way it acted, it almost acted like a third-party peripheral.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is, it should have just had straight-up support. That's all. They should have just had full support for it. I don't get it. It's their own product. That's it. It's like, well, you think people are going to be like, you know, now that this works, I'm not getting a PS4. Shit. No. No, they just want to have one controller to rule them all. You know?
Going back to the topic, also, I just thought of something. Like, now that, you know, Microsoft is doing their you know, games as a service kind of thing, and I just remembered, it's like, I think Windows is the most popular operating system for, you know, PCs in Japan. So it's like,
yep,
there's a whole bunch of Xbox platforms that are available. So why not?
But do they play PC games? That's the thing. Like, we know they play specific games, like StarCraft and stuff like that. But are they big gamers on that level? Right?
I don't know about Japan, but I know Korea is
very special.
Korea is a very PC sort of
centric.
And same thing with China, believe it or not.
Yeah, because I mean, Korea, like, there's these thing called PC bangs, which are super popular. They're like
coffee shop but for gaming, right?
Exactly,
like just gaming stuff.
They sell food. People are there for freaking hours.
I've seen video. It's dark too. That's a weird thing. Yep. It's like you would think it's a lot of light to keep people awake.
And they freaking, you know, they're ultra wide monitors. They're really bad at like 144 frame rate, refresh rate on the monitors, with badass keyboard, mechanical keyboards, and top of the line mouses, and it's like, it's freaking crazy. Those PC cafes.
But that's what I mean. That's where it gets cool. Like, if you have some buddies, and like, yeah, let's do some competitions, because a lot of them will have that. They'll have no different than like if you go to a bar and there's a dart club and the whole thing. Same thing. It's like there's different tournaments and stuff depending on the game that you get to play at these places.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's. And it's what also it's a thing over there because, you know, they're kind of similar to Japan. The living spaces are really small big cities. So they don't really have space for a desktop PC, especially on a gaming one. Mm-hmm. And sort of I was thinking for some reason I was thinking about Brett when talking about this. It's like this would be Brett's kind of like heaven for gaming, because it's like you can just call your buddies and be like, hey, let's meet at the PC cafe at 8 and I'll just chill, get food, and they're all there.
I wish we had a place like that. I wish there was an interest for that, but there's not. Even though
even back in the day, I remember you used to know a guy that was trying to do that. He had like a
Sharky's. Yep. It was over in Brooklyn, and he tried to do that. He was like, "How can we just try to get people to do this?" And I even helped. I brought over. I had an N64, and at the time, the NWO WCW versus NWO Revenge was big, and of course, No Mercy. So I said, "Hey, those are two popular games. People can just come in, beat them up. Everybody likes this stuff." So yeah, I brought that in, and people would come and play. We had a pool table, but what really dominated was people playing Magic: The Gathering, Warhammer. Remember, there was all those tables, and that became their bread and butter because that's what people preferred to do. They weren't interested, because at one point, he had a board on the side. It's like, "Hey, let us know what you're interested in." And we'll see if we can get it, like arcade machines. Because remember, that back area was pretty much open.
Yep.
He was thinking of getting some arcade machines. Nobody cared. They wanted more tables to play Magic and Warhammer. I mean,
it's funny because that's nowadays that's a big thing. Like there, you'll find that there's a lot of comic book stores and collectible places that mostly deal in just tabletop games and Magic: The Gathering, Yu-Gi-Oh/ Pokemon cards. More of those things are board games, but none really too much about the gaming stuff, which is very interesting, especially with how much people are, a lot of people are into gaming in general, but there's no such thing as like, a LAN cafe or, nothing like that.
It's so weird because it's as if they all do it, but it's something that you're supposed to do at home then. That's not something that you would do out in the open. No, we don't do that. We won't.
Because I would be more inclined to play a multiplayer game if I was actually playing in the same room with everybody else than just sort of doing it online.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We have a place called, Mayhem. It's a comic book store, and there's a shop that was next door, and they wound up buying them out. They tore down a wall, and they put a bunch of tables and vending machines. So people can play. There's these tabletop games, and that's what people want. They don't want to play video games. They want to play tabletop games.
It's funny. There's a place called in Philly called Digital Underground / Metal Altar. It's a music store, right? Yeah. But at the same time, it also runs tabletop like card games. Like Magic: The Gathering and all that stuff. So it's like in between the rows where they're selling CDs and like vinyl records, there's these tables. There's this whole row of tables for people to play Magic.
Or
Warhammer. And they sell those Warhammer models so you can paint and stuff.
That was a big thing too, because they started selling those kits, and people wanted to space so they can do all the painting because they didn't have space at home to do it.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's funny. Well, you talk about that, or like a kind of a gathering hub or something, and that's always
the gathering hub.
It's funny that you talk about that, because some people have said, and this is just said, the solution, maybe a solution for GameStop is to do something like that, create a sort of gathering hub for gaming, as opposed to just being a store, being kind of like an enthusiast place where you can kind of hang out as well as play games and do all kinds of other stuff as well as buy.
Wasn't that the leaked out news that they had three different models that they were going to try out in different locations? Yeah. And one of them was that it was going to have like tournaments and stuff. And they have, where you can buy game stuff, but it was more going to be like a social club type of thing. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, come here, play, and then you can buy stuff, but we want to get you in, get into the store. And then who knows, maybe that will happen. Then again, I hope it does. I hope people get into that. It's just getting out the mindset. Like we've already discussed a bunch of that. People just, for some reason, don't seem to crave that need for. Like, I wonder, when was the last time you walked down on 8th Street where the Sulfur Central, where I used to work that area? Because remember, around the corner, there was a Warhammer store.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen. I've walked past there for, you know.
It's gone. It's gone, right?
Oh, yeah. The Sulfur Etcetera is gone.
No, not that, but the Warhammer, because that Warhammer store was there for a long time. And I'm like, all they do is sell those little figures. They don't even have, like, tables to actually play the game.
It's funny because I don't remember that store being there. I don't remember that one. But granted, like, in Manhattan, a lot of those sort of collectibles places kind of closed down. There used to be one up on two of them used to be up in Midtown. And when I was doing some painting and stuff like that, when I was making your Gears of War money, those I knew those stores were there, and like a bunch of them closed down. And even the place that I bought all the paints to paint it,
they're all gone.
It's gone now.
You see, now, Forbidden Planet was before its time, because remember they had the two floors, the big one on the other corner. If they would have come out around that time where they could have had tables, they probably would have been able to keep that location.
They would have been able to sustain it. At least the old place, I would have said.
Yeah, that old place.
Miss Razor says, but then they would charge you five times the cost to play.
They probably would. They'd come up with some kind of... Well, it depends. It depends if you're buying packs or whatever. Because that was the thing at Sharky's. It's like they had that for Magic. And I was like, yeah, but they're just hanging out. I was like, no, they're not just hanging out. They're buying by the boxes. Mm-hmm. And I remember when they would get the Magic cards, it was people that already had their list down. And they like, two boxes.
But what he's talking about is essentially like... you know, like if GameStop was to kind of make this sort of
if GameStop was to do it,
how would they like? Because obviously they're going to want to monetize in some way by you sitting
renting space.
Someone schedules a PC for like an hour. They only use up 50 minutes and they sell you their used time for more double the price.
Have you ever use the computers at a Kinko's?
No.
Okay. That's what it sounds like, you know, what you're suggesting, where it's like, in other words, like at Kinko's, you have your little card and you stick inside the computer and then you know that judges how long you can actually play, and then when you run out you go charge up the car store.
I've used a computer at a Burger King. Do you remember that Burger King down on
I thought you meant the one in Midtown next to Macy's. That one also had
it too. That one had it. Because the one in Wall Street had it, where it's like, oh yeah, once you order your meal, and they would say you have 15 minutes to use a computer, and it had a code. So then you go in the back, and it was a whole row of computers, and then you just go in, and it was like, oh, what's your code? It had its own little setup. And you put in your code, and then poof, you see a little clock, and you have 15 minutes to surf the web, do whatever. And once you were done, it would kick you off.
I'm sure they don't do that anymore.
That place is gone now.
I'm sure nowadays it's the networking password, right?
You know, that's the thing. It's like now we all have smartphones. Like this was before smartphones really caught on.
Yeah.
You don't need that anymore.
So as you guys can tell, we've kind of went into a little bit of a tangent, and as of now, it's just like that's it. We're pretty much, you know, we're pretty much done with all of our topics here.
Yeah,
I guess nothing else
that's happened in the game industry.
Yeah, it's kind of been dry. But you know what? We'll do with the Tony tradition and be like, hey, what are you playing? So yeah, Carlos, go first.
I've only been playing one game, and that is Monster Hunter, streaming live Fridays or Saturdays with the rest of the crew, man. Yo, been having fun. I just got a new hammer, man. It's crazy. It's
hammer, man.
Yeah, man. It's like, because, you know, like all of my hammers were playing the original title in most of Iceborne. I've had, you know, that generic looking hammer thing. But now I have like something that's like a huge ass blade, and I'm like, man, this shit looks crazy. But yeah, man, it's Iceborne is still the butt of games, still butt. I don't think anything's gonna.
Well, I mean, I tried getting into it. It just doesn't do it for me.
Have you tried playing with us?
Yeah, I tried. I remember I tried with Chris. I think it was just with Chris and I. We weren't running around. something about it, but I still need to level up. I was, because I've just started.
You can't join like the specific.
I couldn't really. Yeah, I couldn't do the mission, certain missions that you guys were doing. So.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of didn't care for like. It's funny. It's interesting. It's those sorts of games you're not big into because I remember even Bloodborne wasn't one that was really.
I tried that too. I even had you jump in to try to get me started on it. You're like, all right, this is how you do it. Play this. You do this. You kill this big skeleton monster dragon and.
Mm-hmm.
And just, didn't you not like Monster Hunter because of the monsters? Because they resembled dinosaurs or something?
No, no, no. I don't believe in killing dinosaurs. I don't think there's a need to do it. Something about killing the dinosaurs gets me mad. Because at the same time, like, we're all about excavating, trying to find bones and fossils and doing that whole thing. But then it's okay in games to go and hunt and kill them. For what? Come on. I don't know. It's a little nick I have with things.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, that's all I've been playing. But yeah, quick plug. Probably tomorrow, maybe we'll see. We'll see what happens with everyone else. But we'll probably be streaming tomorrow around 9 o'clock Eastern. 9 p.m. Eastern.
We kind of actually need to update our little
graphic, right?
Graphic thing. Right now, it's got the old date, which was 10. I guess if Tony and the guys are all game to do it, yeah, play some Monster Hunter.
Yeah, man. Gonna get some Popeyes, eat some Monster. Get some Popeyes, eat some Monster Hunter.
Is that the tradition now? It's like just like play, you know, play some Monster, have some Popeyes chicken.
Yeah, man, it's worth celebrating getting Popeyes over, man. You know, it's a tradition that I like to keep. I like to keep doing, man.
Matt, you know, it'd be hilarious if, like, you know, your tradition was like making the food from the Monster Hunter game. That crazy, like, really amazing looking food that they have.
Oh, that'd be crazy. Oh, by the way, Mr. Razor, he said spicy or regular? Definitely spicy. Come on,
spicy.
Man. You gotta have the spicy.
I kind of jump between. Sometimes I feel a bit a lot of time I'll get the regular. Sometimes I'll get the spicy.
Do you get the sauces with the regular?
The sauce? Do I get the sauces with the regular?
Or did you just eat it like, I usually
just eat it like that. Okay. I mean, in general, like the Popeye's chicken, like it's good. You know. You kind of don't. All the extra stuff it adds to it, but it's like you don't need it. It tastes good on its own. It's not like some of the other chicken sandwiches from some of the other places. They're kind of garbage.
You know, like KFC. Anyway, excuse me.
I mean, you know, KFC. It's like, what's up with that skin, man? It's always like mushy and squishy.
Yeah,
you gotta get the crispy. I just get the crispy.
I mean, I get the crispy, but it's too crispy sometimes.
Oh yeah, it's more like a rock.
It's more bread than chicken.
Yeah.
So, what you been playing, Adam?
Oh shit, you know me. I've been playing a lot of old games. I was recently playing Tony Hawk 2 and 3. The PS2 version. What else? Bomberman 64. That was always fun for the N64. On the Switch, mentioned Blazing Chrome. Yesterday, playing Diablo 3, trying to go and finish that one up again. And for the consoles, Devil May Cry 5.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to just get into that whole thing. But, and it's something that we talked about and some stuff that was going on with Tony. Jumping back in the Division.
Uh-oh.
You know, we got the episode 3, the final episode, at least from what they're saying for this season, is coming. Mm-hmm. And that takes place in Coney Island. So going back to New York, and they had the cleaners, and they show a bunch of the other factions that we're familiar with from Division 1. And again, this shows that they're listening to the community, because a lot of people are like, yeah, DC, but it's too open. It doesn't have that gritty feel. It doesn't feel right. It just feels like you're running through the streets, shooting, and having battles. It didn't have what the first one had. So it looks like we're getting a lot more of that. And the only thing that sucks is that there's a massive overhaul that's coming to this game. And it's coming after. It's coming in March, and they're gonna redo everything. So for anybody who's hasn't played in a while, was like, oh, I don't like the whole RNG and all the grind. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they're gonna squash all that and simplify it and try to make it more pretty much like Division 1. So I'm looking forward to that. And the thing is, that happens in March. This new DLC, the final episode, is in February. That's next week. So they didn't give an exact date, but they said February. So
So yeah, like it's a weird one because it's like, okay, let's say you do the February stuff, right? And you go through all of that stuff. Does that mean that a lot of that shit's going to be like negated like the next month?
Oh yeah. That's already going to happen. But that's the other thing. They haven't said of anything special that you're getting in it. It's just the story. It's another story. But that story is critical to what's leading up to season three.
Oh, okay.
And season three is where all the big hurrah and all the craziness is going to happen. And that's what they've been teasing. So, but yeah, everything that you have and what happened when we, I think you were in that chat too, when we went to play and we had the voice of God and Tony and Chris, and we were all maxed out 500. We were ready to do the raid. And they did that little refresh to fix things, the recalibration. And it dropped all of us down, our gear levels, everything changed. And, you know, hand of God, he flipped out, voice of God flipped out and said, yo, fuck this shit. And quit the game.
He sold that shit.
He sold it. You know, and I get that. And that may happen again here. A lot of people that have their perfect builds are going to be probably upset. But this is for the greater good because I've seen the screenshots. I've seen the steps. I follow them. Everybody, I suggest follow Division 2 on Twitch. Every Wednesday, state of the game. The developers come on. They do about 15, 20 minutes just giving you tidbits of what's going on. They'll answer your questions. They're listening. These people are listening. They're making serious changes. This is not like, oh, a little patch. The whole shit's getting overhauled. Everything's getting overhauled. So, yeah, some people will be upset. They're going to jump in and see some of their gear levels down. But then again, a lot of new gear stuff is coming in. We got a flamethrower that's coming. That's going to be fun. So we'll see. We'll see. But the plan is to get back into it. That's the plan.
All right. Cool. Good stuff. Brian, what you been playing?
I've actually been playing a whole lot of Rage 2, in fact.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Everyone remembers that game Rage 2, you know, the sequel to the game that everyone remembers, Rage, right?
Did you like Rage 1?
Oh, yeah, I thought it was really good. Like, for what it was, I thought it was really good.
I didn't like the map. It was fun, but I didn't like the map.
I think, the big thing that people had with Rage is that they associated it with Bethesda. So they thought that it's going to be like a Fallout type game when it wasn't. Yeah, but then it was just, again, it was a single, it was like a narrative-based game that's just like, hey, here's a path and that's it. You know, not much exploration, not much stuff to investigate, and people just didn't like that because they thought, oh, next Fallout 4 type thing or whatnot. But yeah, I did enjoy it.
This one looked like a lot like BioShock. Don't you have special abilities with the hand, right?
Yeah, you have like your powers, which I don't know how that even works, but it just does work. I'm half and half enjoying it. You know, there are some things I like, some things I don't like. It suffers from the Ubisoft open world problem of just, hey, here's an open world for the sake of the open world, and they're just things that happen. None of them make any sense. It's just like, hey, here's a bandit camp. Go and do stuff with that. I'm starting to feel like open world games like this are effectively like, you know how like in every like fancy MMO game or any fancy RPG game, your first quest is like kill 10 goblins or some bullshit like
that. Yeah.
It's the open world game version of that. It's just there because they have nothing else and they don't know anything else. So it's like, hey, here's a bandit camp in this remote place. Why? We don't know. No one knows. It's just there. So yeah, it just feels like it's too big for what it really should be, and it does make sense. Like, you can have an open world game that's small and works really well, like Shadow of Mordor. Yeah. That map wasn't tiny, but maps were decently sized, but there was so much stuff in there that it didn't matter. Whereas this is just like, hey, everything's so far away, just going across from one place to the next place is just like, it's just boring. It really is. So yeah.
That's on Game Pass, right? Rage 2?
That's how I'm playing it, through Game Pass. Yep. I still have until the end of February to finish all of the Game Pass games. So I still had to play like Gears of War and...
We got to do Crackdown, man. Halo. We got to do Crackdown.
I already finished Crackdown 3.
You finished it?
Forget you.
So do you feel like you're more, you know, like... you're less judgmental about this game because of just the fact that it's kind of
you didn't pay for it.
You didn't really pay for it.
You know the full price for it. Right?
I would say yeah, because if I did pay like full price for this, I'd not be happy. Because it just seems like it suffers from the problem that Tony has with open world games, in that it's just big for no reason apart from being big, and it doesn't need to be big.
Well, Brian, it's big because it can fit in all those orbs. Yeah, there's ton of orbs.
Hey, ton of orbs in Crackdown. That was all the fun of it.
You're talking about Rage, or you're talking about...
He's talking about Rage,
I thought he was talking about Crackdown 3.
Oh, no, Crackdown has a lot of stuff. Did you play that?
Yeah. I played it with Tony.
I stopped giving down about orbs like midway through. Because I'm like, I don't care anymore. Like, this is just way too many orbs.
Yeah, there's way too many, man.
Yeah. So, yeah. Crackdown, no. Rage 2 through Game Pass. I think... Hopefully I should be done by this week or next week, and then I can have enough time to fit in Gears 1, maybe Gears 4.
Oh, snap.
And I'll try and fit in Gears 5, but I think that may be a bit too much.
Yeah, no, Gears 5 is no joke. Those boss battles, shit.
Yeah, I've heard that there's one that's just like really, really brutal.
Me and Adam got stuck on a part where there's just some random ass guys in a building, you know. Remember the snipers?
They just keep and it was with the fog, you can't really see them, and
that was crazy, man.
I guess I'll talk what I'm playing. Death Stranding. You know I'm still playing.
Still? I thought you finished that.
I'm still on like chapter 6 in the game. I play slow, and I've been prepping for, because I got C2E2 coming up in March. I got a bunch of things that are just finishing thing. I just finished the thing for Marvel. I'm doing the thing for Boom. So I still got a lot of other work to get out of the way before I did. So whenever I get a little bit of time, probably not even this weekend or next. When is it? It's probably the following weekend. Yeah, following weekend's my girlfriend's birthday. So, and Tony's going to be out. So I'm going to be busy. But that's pretty much what I'm doing. I'm pretty good. Like, I got all the, I think I said this before, I got all the kind of grindy trophies out of the way. So I got up all the in the game, you have all these facilities that you can, people that you can meet, you can bring up their level. And then, you get more bandwidth to make structures. A lot of the structures in the game kind of make traversal easier. So like, there are these things called zip lines in the game, where you can kind of set them up in different locations to kind of speed, as opposed to walking through all the, doing walking simulator through all this different, different terrain and stuff like that. Once you get to a certain point, you can get these zip lines and then just skip a lot of the areas that are really difficult. So any of the areas that are covered with ghosts, any of the places that have a lot of terrain or rains a lot, you can just zip right through it. And when you connect these different places, like the different people, you get more of this bandwidth. And then also you get to see the structures and things that other people have built too. So sometimes there's like these shelters that you can go into where you can kind of safely save your game, and you don't need to save out in the field. The zip lines, structures like the mailboxes and all kinds of other things that you can kind of build to kind of make things easier for yourself. So I did all those things out of the way, so all I really need to do is just play through the game, and that's it. So nice. That's what's going on in my world. Next thing I'm going to play, I think I'm going to play something a little bit shorter before I jump into another sort of Metroidvania traverse, story thing.
Yeah.
I know that...
or care package game.
Yeah, care package game.
I wonder if we're going to get any other games similar to this, let's say, but sponsored by FedEx or something. It's like, I can see that happening.
I think it's funny, like sponsored games, I think of Sneak King. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. The Burger King
Your Salad game.
Mm-hmm. I think that's worth a lot of money now.
It's a collection. Oh, Sneak King?
All of those Burger King. Remember there was like a bumper car game?
My brother, I think he still has that. Sneak King.
Yeah, save them.
Sponsored game, sponsored by FedEx. Death Stranding 2. But that's about it. And hopefully I'll be able to get to play something else. I'm not really looking, at least for me, I'm not really looking forward not looking forward. I just haven't. There's nothing on the radar at this point in time for me. So I'm probably just going to go back and hit the games that I really wanted to play from the end of last year.
There you go. That's the best way of doing it. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like there's so many games to play, and it's like there's so many games that I have to play, and it's games that I want to keep playing, and it's all about finding the time.
Like, somehow you always manage to go back to Division II.
I go back to, well, that's the thing. It's like I go back to the games that I really enjoy. I still play My Friend Pedro, you know, because that's a fun one. You can pick up and just play some missions.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all about going to the big ones, like Days Gone. Days Gone, I have all my days are gone with that because I haven't even played it. you know, it's like I haven't played it. Nico, is that it? Am I saying that right?
Neo,
that's another one. I haven't even started.
I mean, did you even want to play that one? Neo was that one?
I thought it was going to be fun. It was like a samurai thing, and then the Neo 2 came out, and now it's like, oh, yeah, let me play this. I got the first one. I mean,
that game was supposed to be like Dark Souls or, you know, Bloodborne.
It was more fun, like action part of it. I don't know.
You were enjoying it then?
I didn't even start it. I just watched videos. It looked fun. So, but then that's it. Then that's, again, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back to God of War, the remastered one. Mm-hmm. I didn't finish that one. And I really had urge to play the old God of War, you know, like run around. And I, oh shit, now I know why I didn't finish it. Because the QTEs are randomized in that version. And I was in a boss battle and, you know, I kept dying. I'm not hitting the QTEs properly. And I noticed that every time I would reload, it's a different QTE format. I was like, shit, why'd they do that?
You know, that's a new one, God of War.
That's the new one that's on PS4, yeah.
Oh,
not the grandpa, you know, the dad simulator one, but the, you know, the old school one that they remastered. Yeah. And it's all the QTEs are randomized. So you can't remember the form. It's like, all right, so I'm gonna press square and then triangle and X, 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 X. No, now it'll be like square X, now triangle for three times. So you just have to remember that and just stay focused. So there's all this chaos going on, and at the same time, as you know, then the game's just swinging around in the air, and you got to just really fast see where the QTEs pop up so that way you can trigger. But it's random, and that's why I stopped. But I charged my Vita. I still have the old ones, the Chain of Olympus and stuff on there, and I want to play those again. So I'll just play it on the Vita. I was trying to get it to work on my iPad and for the PSP ones, and it works, but it's kind of slow, and I don't know why. It's something with the emulator not working right, because it should run. I mean, it's an iPad Pro. That shit's a beast. It should play everything.
Yeah, that shit. That, I mean, it costs as much as a freaking laptop, you know?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. So it. I know it's something going on, the settings I got to do, but whatever. I'll play it on the Vita. Vita's.
All right. So I guess that's it. I mean, anything else you guys want to talk about, or we good?
Oh, yeah, we're still doing the giveaway. I know Dana is all pissed off. Only because we're trying to get rid of these things. We still have the Gemini Man, the Blu-ray. Yeah. So head over to thecoalition.com. We still have those. Register. And we're doing a giveaway of the Blu-rays if people want to do that. And got some stuff coming up on the site. Some stuff that I'm going to be posting up on. I was going to post today, but earlier. I had so much shit I was working on, but remember, my back went out. I couldn't sit down. I definitely couldn't do shit. So everything is just like half-assed. And that's pretty much it. What about you guys?
Gemini Man. I don't know about that one.
Nobody does. That's the whole thing.
But hey, man, I don't mind getting a copy. I know we don't Throwdown members don't qualify, but. Hey.
Because I still got to send out our
the Glorious War gift, right?
Glorious War, a little giveaway thing. but I don't even think that Australia is the same region as the United States and Japan, is it?
No, it's wait.
Good question. That's actually a
good question.
I do not know.
Yeah, Brian, do you know that? Yeah, no.
Why would Brian know? He doesn't even know things about Europe anymore.
No, but I think it's linked to the Asian market. It's a when it comes to purchasing and stuff. So maybe it's the same when it comes to region.
Well, it's its own continent. So maybe it just has its own thing.
No, I don't know. I don't know. All I know is Tim Cahill is from there, and I don't like him. And that's the reason why I didn't like Australia when that came up before. It's like, oh, you have something against Australia? I said, yeah, I do. And it's not so much the people. It's just one person. Tim Cahill.
Wallabies are from Australia, so Australia is good in my books.
Australia's burning. You got to give it some slack.
That's not right. I don't want
it. Well, anyway, that's about it. Thank you guys for joining us. Remember to watch us on Twitter and on Twitch and YouTube. Don't forget to subscribe to us on all those different things. Make sure also we're also on SoundCloud as well as iTunes and all that other good stuff. I am your host, Emilio Lopez. Tony will be back. He will return. Carlos Romero.
Yeah, I'll be back too. Later, people. Deuces. Yo, make sure to watch and listen to the Throwdown. Okay, take care, everyone. What am I forgetting? I think that's it.
All right. Adam Vail.
Yeah, everybody have a good weekend. If you want, you can follow me because some people have been like, oh, wow, you're sending a lot of random mod shit. I find a lot of odd emulators and stuff. So, and I like to share that information where people can get in how to build these things on Twitter. So you can follow me at Adam Vail, capital A.
And Brian Majoma.
I also forgot to mention that I platinumed World Warfare the other week. Well, this week,
Wait. Modern Warfare?
Yeah, the new one.
You platinumed it?
It doesn't have multiplayer trophies.
No, but I didn't know you even had it for the...
I talked about it last week, right?
Yeah, you did. Before. Well, Adam was, having his...
Yeah. I got for PlayStation. Again, it's a really short one. It's 10 hours.
For me, the hard one was going to be the sniper mission with the wind.
That's not that bad.
Holy shit.
It's not that... Again, compared to other ones, this is really quite short. I mean...
Yeah.
Like, there's one mission, one in the house. There's, two trophies there, but you can just replay it that 2 seconds.
Where you have to make sure your buddy doesn't get shot.
Mm-hmm. Amen. So, yeah, you can platinum it in 10 hours with no problem.
I don't know. That might be a goal.
Is that your new squad goal, son?
That might be that in Division 2 to get the platinum in that one. If these fixes in March actually come to pass, and they get rid of all this useless RNG, I'm tired of running around for shit. But yeah,
It would be nice if they did, but I know they won't. Also, fun fact. I've not played Warframe this year.
Wait, this is the beginning of the year.
He's laying all these megatons at the end of the show.
Yo, man, you just gave us two more hours of material, Brian. Yeah.
What are you talking about?
No, I'm just not. Adam,
you did talk about it.
I've not had the urge to go back and play.
That's it. The free to play is over, but you're done. You put in more than enough hours in that game. Forget it. It's time to move on.
Well, then I heard that this game called Monster Hunter is quite good.
Ooh.
So I might jump on that.
What?
Yo, man, Monster Hunter is the
shit. He's saying these are some megatons right here. But wait, you're not going to be playing on the PlayStation now.
I don't know yet. Probably again. It's just the time zone with you guys. If we were all on the same time zone or quite close, then yeah, I would. But
five hours
difference.
If they're playing, these guys are usually playing around now.
Right? Yes. So we start playing at 9 p.m. Eastern, which is what's that, Brian? 9 p.m. Eastern,
2 a.m.
That's pretty bad.
I don't know, last week, you guys started playing, and then I got the notification just as I went to bed that you guys were about to stream. I'm dude.
I think about it. Like, you guys would have to play toward the middle of the day to try to get Brian in there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if we'll be able to do that. The thing, and we used to start later for our streams, but we noticed that if we stream earlier, there's more people that join.
Yeah, because people are, looking around. That's when you get too late, they're playing or they're going to sleep.
Well, you're not, it's not streaming at 12, 8, late at night when a lot of people are going to bed. midnight. I mean, granted, for all of us, it's really good because it's like that's when every the day is over and all that stuff. But some people, you know, they're not a bunch of night owls like everybody else is around here. But yes, that's the end of the show, and I want to thank you guys, and see you later.
Yeah, see you later.
Deuces.